It is the third millennium. For nearly 100 fiscal quarters, the God Emperor Gaben has ruled as the supreme commander of PC gaming, and to whom thousands of mommy and daddy's dollars are sacrificed each day for digital goods in a sales format that some EU officials might suggest is similar to gambling, which it isn't. It's not gambling. To be a video game in such times is to be one amongst untold billions of roguelites. Gamers are beset on all sides by lousy vampire survivor clones and teeming hordes of unnecessary roguelike genre tags. Forget the promise of progress and Steam summer sales, for in the grim dankness of the mundane present, there is only poorly implemented roguelike game mechanics. Take it away.
Greetings and welcome aboard the rogue trading void ship Grog Pod, wherein we capture and interrogate rogue games or games that possibly have rogue modes inside them, question mark, for various tech remnants. And if the game ascends to a high enough trust level, then we revisit it at the end of season recap tournament to determine who leads the crusade fleet for the year. I am your Imperator Hosticus of the Podmodium, Scotilius Bergorion, and with me are my servitor co-hosts.
Howdy, this is Andrew Hivescum Harshman.
And it's me, Colin. I'm just a really big guy.
And as if that wonderful intro to set the stage by Andrew, what wasn't clear enough, we are entering the Void Warp, and we are taking a look at Warhammer 40,000, or 40K, I guess, Dark Tide. Released November 30th, 2022, available on Steam, Xbox, PlayStation 5. And this was a work put out, developed, published by one Fat Shark out of Stockholm, Sweden, who they've put out a number of games since 2010. They did Lead and Gold, : Gangs of the Wild West. 2014, Escape Dead Island. 2015, Warhammer, End Times, Vermintide. 2018, we got the sequel Vermintide 2, and 2022, we got 40K Darktide. This one is interesting. So Darktide has a total of 103,283 total reviews, which sounds like a lot. And this would be the number 25th most popular rogue, in air quotes, game of any sort, if it was tagged as such. It is not. We'll get to that in a minute.
Wait,
and
what?
For context, now again, this is where it'll get weird, but we'll talk about it. Warhammer Vermintide 2 is tagged as a roguelite on Steam, and that is the number 18th most popular, judging from its review volume. Anyway, your average player of Warhammer 40K Darktide has about 107 hours in it, which I can 100% totally see. Andrew, you must place your offering on the una sententia descriptionorium of what one does in Warhammer 40,000 Darktide.
Oh, right. My one sentence description for Warhammer 40,000 Darktide is science fiction left for dead with classes, build customization, loot, and a vaguely roguelike optional game mode.
I would say that's pretty succinct. And I think this kind of launches into our first talking point, because people downloading this episode are like, hey, wait a minute. What's this action RPG game doing in my roguelike podcast feed? I think this one is interesting to talk about because there have been a number of games of note lately that are not roguelike games, really kind of by any, well, I don't know, RPG, let's call them RPG games, that have kind of like roguish modes either built in as like kind of sidecars to them or DLCs or things. Our previous episode that we kind of touched on this a little bit was, I remember editing it, and Andrew, you made the quippy note of, if you can remember the name of it, Remnant from the Ashes. The DLC mode for that was quite roguelite-y, as it were. But the Prey game that is not the original Prey, the other Prey, the new Prey, has a DLC mode called Moon Crash that was, I think, maybe like the first shot at this of like, hey, let's take like your standard RPG game, let's come out with some DLC or rogue-ish game mode attached to it and see how it goes. And I think people still have kind of a vague sense of nostalgia for that. I played a little bit of Moon Crash, meh. But there are other games like Bloons Tower Defense 6, not a roguelike game. It has a roguelite mode that has come out recently. Hearthstone has one, Splatoon has one. Helldivers 2, which some of us have played a little bit of, I believe is supposed to be coming out with a roguelite mode
Oh,
at
really?
some
Okay.
point.
I
But you
do
have
feel,
like,
honestly, that game is semi like a roguelike already
well,
in
probably we
some ways.
discussed it a while ago on our definition
Yeah.
episode, and
Yeah.
I think, yeah, generally we're like, oh yeah, it's pretty close. And I think there will be some parallels here, but like Age of Empires 4 has something that's like a roguelite mode, I guess. The Last of Us 2, The Division 2, God of War, Ragnarok, colon, Valhalla, Path of Exile 2 has a dedicated one. So there's I think a rationale here to discuss a game that is inherently not a roguelite at all, Warhammer 40K Darktide, but has a couple modes that if you squint hard enough, maybe could be. And I think crucially, kind of tying into a point with Vermintide 2, that does actually have like a real roguelite mode in it called the Chaos Wastes. And
Yes.
I think anytime that you kind of do stuff, or if you're looking up stuff about like the two modes in Darktide that are tangentially adjacent to the theme of the podcast, then you'll inevitably hear people saying, like, Chaos Waste this and Chaos Waste that. Whenever Chaos Waste is not on screen, people should be asking, where's Chaos Waste? So, before we jump into all of that, there's so much to discuss. Andrew, what exactly is Warhammer?
Oh wow, golly. well, Warhammer 40,000, which this game is set. Well, before I talk about what Warhammer is, let me tell you a little bit about me. I need to establish my credentials. All right, so I got 3,000 points of painted Catachan Imperial Guard. I got easily 1,500 points of painted Tyranids. I got an Intercessor kill team, a Warp Coven kill team. I have, although they're not mine, I have personally painted approximately 1,000 points of Tau, and I scratch built an Orc Stompa in 3 days. And it looks pretty good. And I painted it, and it looked good enough that when I brought it to the event, some people asked the question, "Is that the official model?" So it's a game that I play, a tabletop game. Warhammer 40,000 is, of course, a spin-off of Warhammer Fantasy, which is sort of a more traditional orcs versus humans versus elves, et cetera, a fantasy setting. Whereas Warhammer 40,000 is all of that in space. It's a very grim, dark setting. This particular game is set in one of the primary locales of Warhammer 40,000, which is the Imperium of Man. Of humankind stretches across the galaxy and includes, like, I don't know, a million worlds or something. Everything about Warhammer 40,000 is really big. The number in the title, the year that it takes place in, the 41st century, and the sheer scale, like, oh yeah, humanity has gone out to a million different worlds, and there's billions upon billions of people living on these planets. This game, I think, for a squad-based shooter, a co-op shooter, is set in such a brilliant specific location. It's in the Imperium, specifically. It is on a hive world. A hive world is a planet that is completely covered in a metropolitan squalor. A hive planet is occupied by several hive cities, which are giant, like 10-mile-high megastructures in which tens of billions of people live on top of each other in
It's
these.
about what I expect the Dallas-Fort Worth metro area looks like.
Precisely. So it's very big. It's very not so nice, but boy, is it rendered in a beautiful way. Unreal Engine 5, maybe, or something like that. So I don't know
It's
if I
great
answered your
to
question,
look
Scott.
at, but I don't know if it would be great to live in.
No,
The
not at all.
slime, the toxic sludge. glints so beautifully in the light of the reflected torch fires,
It's just
just like
like
burning
pipes of
barrels.
goop everywhere,
Lots
just
of
giant
goop.
open chasms.
Quite. I'm glad you didn't ask me for a one sentence description of Warhammer 40,000. It is a science fiction setting, as the tagline says. It's grimdark, and there's only war, only conflict. And the core product of Warhammer 40,000 is, of course, a tabletop war game. And this is a more sort of micro, a more zoomed in look at that setting. And instead of playing as like some of the more like bombastic and powerful characters that exist in Warhammer 40,000, the Space Marines come to mind, are what most people know about, who are, superhuman, super powerful, Master Chiefs type folks. Obviously, they were, obviously they were the inspiration for Master Chief. Anyway, instead, you're playing relatively normal people who are living in this terrible dystopia. Relatively normal people. Those normal people being, well, I'm sure we'll get into the cast of characters. Do you have any follow-up questions, Scott?
Well, I guess like I was excited to jump into this because I know very little about the Warhammer universe other than giant power armor suits, flaming swords, and memes that you see on 4chan of people photoshopping Trump's head onto things. But that's kind of the extent of my knowledge of Warhammer. I know it's maybe a little bit more involved. I have this one comment on the Warhammer 40K subreddit that I was using to kind of educate myself beforehand. That a naked bear wrote 11 years ago, saying that as kind of like a brief history lesson of 40K. That I think I was reading this out. I'm like, surely this sounds about right. The Emperor, Space Jesus, made super soldiers, Space Marines, and half of them rebelled to worship evil gods. The Emperor, quote, died during this and is now a vegetable on Earth acting as a lighthouse for hell. FTL travel used hell for a shortcut. Humanity may have effectively conquered the galaxy, but kind of suck, and technology and are the punching bag of all of the aliens. Eldar, space elves, used to be a thing and are now sad that they are irrelevant. They created an evil god by accident, so now it is their own fault. Orcs are like talking mushrooms who are just soccer hooligans looking for a fight. Tyranids are like the Zerg and aliens from Aliens. Necrons fluff changes way too much, but they are basically Egyptian space robots. Tau are what if anime and communism had a baby. Mech warrior everywhere. There are four evil gods for pleasure, decay, change, and violence. I can go into more detail, but that would just be a wall of text. Just remember that everything sucks in this universe and it is awesome for it.
There you have it. And I think that is maybe something that is sometimes lost in modern interpretations, that everything does indeed suck. A lot of oh boy, this is like a whole big involved conversation. But something I do want to stress is that well, Colin, early on, when we were first playing this game, one of our first sessions, you said something to the effect of you said something to the effect of after like friendly firing someone, presumably, which thankfully there's no friendly fire damage, but shooting at a friendly person, you said something to the effect of, I can't tell the difference between the good guys and the bad guys. Ding,
Yes.
ding, ding. Exactly.
I mean,
So,
I've read Eisenhorn, so
all right. You
but
get
from Dan Abnett, who is also the writer for this game.
my man. You get it.
Yeah.
You got it.
So
Excellent.
I understood when you referenced that earlier. I knew who that was.
Perfect. Oh, I'm glad. All right. Excellent. embarrassingly, I did have to double check how to spell his name. I'm feeling
Yeah,
bad.
I mean, I yeah, that's fine. It's a
Yeah.
weird name.
So the one thing I will say is that in that description that you read off of Reddit, Scott, very good. Sorry, what was the name of that poster?
That was by a naked bear.
A naked bear. Brilliant, brilliant work. I would just add that I just want to underline and iterate that the Emperor of Man w wasn't so great either. He was pretty bad too, for the record. Yeah, those and in terms of like aesthetically, it captures a lot of people's imagination because you've got this science, this gothic science fiction sort of look
But
that
it's also
permeates.
got orcs with a K, which are the best thing. I love them so much. They're basically just like, if you believe it hard enough, you can make anything happen.
Indeed.
And it's like, how do the orc spaceships work? It's like they just believe it so hard that it does. No one else can fly them because you don't believe it hard enough.
Yeah, they have like they have a sort of a psychic psychosphere of sorts that allows them to affect reality just by their shared belief, which is,
Bend
and for a
reality to
long
their
time,
will, and their will is more bullets.
quite. And I'm checking my watch here. Real quickly, I do want to just mention orcs specifically. For a long time, I thought they were kind of goofy. I thought they were too goofy for the setting. But then was involved in the hobby for several years went by. I got into Warhammer 40,000 during lockdown. I thought they were kind of goofy. And my opinion started changing a little bit. And it's like, oh, okay, I guess they're not that big of a, they don't stick out that much in the setting. Maybe they do sort of fit in. But then what cemented it was, there's this fan CG series called Astartes. They put out a trailer for like their second season. And in that, there's a very short clip of some Space Marines fighting orcs. And the depiction of the orcs in that was like so terrifying. Just these giant guys with these giant axes, just clobbering this guy clad in power armor. I'm like, oh, wait a minute, these guys are actually kind of scary. Like you might laugh when you first see them, but they're actually very imposing and intimidating. But anyway, well, interesting. Okay, so Colin, I didn't know that you had read any of the books. Scott, I'm of course going to be interested to hear both of your opinions, both the totally newbie impression of this setting and also the book learned
I guess I
experience of this.
also I played through all of Space Marine 1 and was sorely disappointed that you didn't get to pilot the giant mech at the very end, but I definitely heard enough of the orcs shouting Space Marine for 15 hours that I think I got my fill from that game. But I guess
There you go.
I've also played the Warhammer spin-off StarCraft a lot.
Yes, of course. Which Scott, as our Omega host, perhaps you can, and our Omega game historian, perhaps you can correct me. But my understanding is that StarCraft was a licensed Warhammer 40,000 game
Was it?
initially, and this is how the story goes. And then partway through development, early in development, that no longer was the case, and then Blizzard said, okay, we got to come up with our own science fiction universe and set of factions. And that's what they ended up coming up with. And famously, people have pointed to the Zerg as being maybe kind of an ape, kind of a ripoff of the Tyranids. But really, the Tyranid designs very much informed future, or pardon me, the Zerg designs in StarCraft 1 very much informed and inspired future Tyranid model designs.
Well, I guess regardless
They've shared from each
of,
other. Anyway, yeah, regardless.
I guess like regardless if, you know, Blizzard did just do that meme of like looking over at the homework meme, but it like the Warhammer universe seems to be kind of like pumping out a lot of games lately, and I kind of wish that Blizzard would maybe do that with like their IP a little more of like, you know, if we had a game like this in the StarCraft universe, that would be super dope. Like I would be super, super on board with it. But
If we, sorry, if we had a what in the StarCraft universe?
you know, if we had a Dark Tide like
Ah,
game
right.
with roguelike like light like modes in it,
Sure.
that's
Like
a
imagine the Amerigo cutscene from StarCraft 1, the
oh, there we
famous
go.
one where the Space Marines go on to the space station to blow it up because it's
I got your
infested with Zerg. Yeah, I've brought it
Tyranids
up multiple times on this podcast. Like you just turn that into a squad shooter, and that's amazing. And of
ready
course,
here.
that whole sequence is very much inspired by the film Aliens and by the Warhammer 40,000 board game Space Hulk, et cetera, et cetera. So again, all these things sort of share DNA. And also, I will
Looking it
mention,
up, it was
StarCraft is
actually
now getting its own tabletop board game. Yes, Colin, what have you found?
Warcraft that they were trying to make. They were
Oh,
trying to make it
interesting.
after Warhammer, and they weren't
Oh.
able to get the IP. So they were just like, "Well, we'll just do generic humans and generic orcs," because also, like,
Aha.
there's a reason that Warhammer 40K is the real Warhammer now, and Warhammer Fantasy is just kind of also there. Because Warhammer 40K is unique and interesting, and Warhammer regular is
I would.
less differentiated from.
Sure, for sure, for sure. I get where you're coming from, and I'm sure there's a lot of Warhammer Fantasy and Warhammer Age of Sigmar fans who disagree. But as someone who's embroiled in the tabletop hobby, that's kind of my impression too. I haven't actually
I'm sure it's
played
very fun
Warhammer
to play, and I'm
Fantasy.
sure there's good content from it, but it's not as
Distinct,
different.
and from other fantastical settings, and for sure, for sure.
Well, speaking of fantastical settings, after you've downloaded the 91 gigabyte install size for this
Oof.
game,
Oh boy.
which I remember, like, when SSDs first came out and it was like 125 gigs, I'm like, oh, that's great. I can fit all of my games on here and I'm not ever going to have to worry about it. Fast forward to now, and whoo, it like I can imagine a not too distant future in which just games are just straight up coming on 125 gig SSDs like old Nintendo cartridges, and you're just plugging them right into your hard drive. But the
We'll just be streaming them, Scott. Well, you know this. We'll be renting our games from the internet.
I don't want that to be true, but it
Look
will
into
be.
your
Keep
heart.
trying.
Look into your heart. You know it to be true.
No, we're gonna be playing on emulators with old ASCII graphics games for the next 6 years, I guarantee it. All right, so this game begins with quite the intro cinematic. I think the cinematic design for this game is very good. It's been a while since we've played a game with, quote, real graphics or like stuff that like really pushes your graphics card to work overtime. But like these pre-rendered cutscenes, I think are well executed. I think like as someone who doesn't really know much about the 40K universe, other than like the silliness factor, I'm just like, yep, sign me on board for like all of this weird. What was the movie where like the spaceship went to hell and back?
Event
Event
Horizon.
Horizon. Like all that kind of like wild, like it, like it's horror, but like silly in a way. Like I don't know, I'm not super big into horror, but
It's
that's
like dark humor,
yeah.
black comedy.
Dark fantasy sci-fi question mark stuff. But this intro cinematic I like a lot, where you have this ship that's something that's like a hybrid between a dark gothic cathedral and a space shoe flying through space.
A beautiful Italian shoe flying through the warp. Yes. These spaceship designs really exemplify that gothic science fiction aesthetic that is so delightful.
And it really just kind of like underlines like you are in this universe. It's very thematic and just a good way to kind of set the expectations. And then once you hit the inevitable loading screens that you will see frequently, you're greeted with all sorts of Warhammerisms that I found up this person's GitHub where they took some time to write down, I think, almost all of them
Oh, really?
that.
Approximately how many are there?
Oh
Or how many are
gosh.
collected?
Probably over 150, maybe like two,
Wow.
300 maybe. It's kind of hard to
Wow.
tell. But we have things like there is no being so foul as the traitor, or honor the craft of death. And the first time that I saw that, I just kind of like burst out laughing of like, yep, we're in Warhammer, baby. Blessed be thy aim. Blessed be the fury. War calls. Will you answer?
Indeed. Yeah, it does these loading screen messages, and you're going to see a lot of them because this game has kind of long load times. It's a little bit of an issue, I'm not going to lie. Are great, and they're nice little pieces of microfiction that help sort of establish like, hey, this is the ethos This is the fascist mindset of this regime, this planet-spanning regime. And this is like what human beings are, this is the kind of messaging that human beings are being brainwashed with. And yeah, it can come off as a bit comical at times. But let me assure you that a lot of Warhammer 40,000 is being serious.
I mean, well, there's nothing comical about the line, only in death can we truly serve the emperor. I mean,
Right.
that's really, I mean, just
This
only the most
isn't a
serious thing.
laughing matter.
But
I
this
think
gets
it's
they are in universe, they are super serious about it. It's
right.
funny sometimes to
Yes.
us,
Indeed.
but it is not, they are not laughing. And it's very obviously like a parody
Or
of
you are.
like what if space fascism just went like completely up its own ass kind of thing. And like
Correct.
we can see from our outside perspective, like, oh yeah, like it's funny because it's so over the top. And I can imagine that like that kind of messaging is just completely lost on people, much like the Punisher franchise is, but
Or Helldivers.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah,
Correct.
yes.
exactly. But we're greeted with well, even before we get into anything with this game, we have to go through everyone's favorite character creation sequence where you pick through your classes, your home world, and childhood stuff. There's kind of a lot going on here.
It was confusing for me going through that because I was like, I don't think any of this affects anything. Maybe like a couple of quippy dialogue lines, like or what eye color you can have or something.
Correct. That's my understanding.
Well, like
I meant to research it, but I didn't.
well, like the class picking one is probably the thing that has the most impact, where it's like, do you want to play as like the giant hulking tank
Yes,
class, or
I
do you
do.
want to
Yes, please.
always.
Easy answer. Or if you're like me, do you want to play as the wienery mage whose head explodes if you use too much of your power? I saw that. Sign me up. I don't know anything about it. I'm a psyker now. Psyker for life. Ride till we die. But like things like homeworld and your childhood and like picking out all of your backstory stuff, I don't know if that has impact on like the numerous amounts of voice lines that your character spouts through this game, but it's good flavor text if nothing else. I was kind of rushing through it for the same reason that like Andrew had grouped us all of like, all right, we're gonna do some co-op missions, and then I didn't realize like, oh shit, I gotta do like 15 minutes of homework first before I can join someone's game here.
Yeah, well, did you bring your character sheet?
Also, you
What do you
have to
mean?
download the 90 gigs, so
Well, I mean, yeah.
Indeed. As you say, you have to pick the homeworld of Cadia in order to have access to purple eyeballs. I want to say that maybe my character's like gang affiliation determined like what skins I had access to, what like headpiece items. I'm not totally sure. But you're right. If nothing else, it's sort of good world building and a fun opportunity to kind of feel like your character is indeed customized to your liking. But
But this
the class is the big thing, and then you go into a 15-minute tutorial, 10-minute tutorial ish.
But yeah, I think like this tutorial sequence where the story is like, you're being jailed for crimes of heresy of some sort. Your standard Warhammer background story, and wouldn't you know it, the enemies have attacked and your jail gets blown up, and you gotta escape, and you have to, jump and mount and press the reload button. And oh yes, this is how a first person shooter works. Your way to a basically like a little mini wave survival mode.
Yeah, similar to Vermintide 2, the tutorial is a jailbreak, basically, where you are trying to escape.
And yeah, I guess like you meet up with the inquisitors who have jailed you, but you sit crucially save one of them from death, who actually doesn't seem to be too terribly hamstrung by having a giant sword plunged through her chest. But that's Warhammer,
She made her saves.
exactly.
I'm trying to remember, the armor, maybe something, something, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, but indeed, you critically during the tutorial. You save one of your former jailers, and that's enough for
If
them
you're a
to
good,
trust
you
you.
truly are a good soldier for the Emperor. You love the Emperor. My
Well,
beloved.
yes, that's that I guess is up to the individual character, because or the individual player, because this intro, like, who knows, maybe you are actually a heretic. Like, it doesn't
Yeah, that's
spell it
fair.
out. It's kind of vague, right? Regardless, during the tutorial, the storyline is that you ingratiate yourself to your jailers, and they say, well, you know, we can we right now we got to get out of this situation. You know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, et cetera, et cetera. Let's fight our way out of here together.
And after doing so, you board the StarCraft looking drop ship, or I guess Helldivers drop ship, and then you zip off out to your main hub zone of the game, the Morning Star, spelt
Which is
like,
that shoe that you mentioned?
yes, it's the space cathedral shoe. I almost said Cthulhu shoe, but that would also be appropriate for the Warhammer universe.
Now, y'all might not realize that because you're just hanging out in this hub world, which is relatively small in terms of the space that you're running around. But again, just like the Hive world, just like the number 40,000, this spaceship is huge. There are thousands upon thousands of people living on this ship.
Most of which you never see, but you do
Yes.
see in various cutscenes of them having fun, like playing cards or doing other like cool activities. Playing And you pickleball, you know, going to the spa. the what would the pickleball equivalent of Warhammer be? The pickleballicus?
Oh, it's
It'd be
Blood Bowl,
same
by the way. Yeah.
Blood Bowl.
Yeah, that's another Warhammer game. Anyway, pickleball in the grimdark future.
It'd be the
Interesting.
same,
Yeah.
except the ball would have spikes. There you
Oh, so
go.
true.
And you'd have to wear armor to play it. And so, of course, after you've done your 10-minute prologue of basic training, you arrive to your hub world to do checks, notes, more basic training before you can join someone else's game, where you have to go and talk to Stephanie at the oh, I'm gonna get this wrong because I didn't write it down. The psychatorium?
Ooh, boy.
Physicorium? It's
Yeah, some.
something close to that.
Yeah. Colin, do you want to take a shot at it?
I don't have it written in front of
The
me.
Psychareum is what I'm going to go
That
with.
sounds right. Okay.
Psychareum, maybe.
And that's where you do a little bit more of like, here's how to do like these kind of dodge mechanics or like parrying melee attacks and things like that. Stuff
Right.
that I
And
feel like.
this is like a Matrix type land where your handler is creating like hallucinations of enemies for you to
It's
train and
the
fight.
X-Men Danger Room or whatever they call it.
Ah, there you go. Yeah. Which I thought was kind of a clever use of existing lore. It's like, oh, well, maybe there's a psyker that's so powerful they can do a holodeck type thing, I guess. That works well for this sort of training environment.
But going through that, now you finally have access to play with your friends. Oh, great. After 20 some minutes, we can now party up, and we can choose one of the major game modes available to us here in 40K. And from my experience, like 40K feels very much like a Destiny sort of game of like it's ac an action RPG looter shooter that you go out on missions and you farm XP and you turn that XP into 10,000 different currencies that you use for stuff to
Yes.
get an axe that has 2% better stats. It's the standard Destiny experience that I've put 100 plus hours into.
Right. We got cube experience. We got cylinder currency. We got paper currency, wax currency. We got Aquila currency. We have USD currency. Yeah, there's a lot of currencies, and it's kind of overwhelming at first.
But you go up to like this, and I think like the art design for this hub world is really fun and
Art
has lots of
design. Sorry to interrupt. It's you're right. I agree.
it's just like tidal waving you with flavor. I do wish that like we could explore more of the ship, but I can see that like oh like the game wasn't designed to handle like this many polygons already. Where it's so bespoke with like. And I've been into a lot of Gothic churches, just like taking photos and like going on tours and stuff. But like, it has like all of like the extremely Baroque and ornate like little overhangs with like the little knobs on them. That I mean, in this case, they're they're coated with knives and dripping with blood, but you know, like all that has to be modeled. And I'm sure if the ship was like 10 times as big, like the file size of the game would probably be 100 times as big.
It would have had to come up with double the loading screen messages because it would have taken that much longer. Yeah, this is, I guess, the bridge of the ship. It's like the main command center or whatever for
Crazy that they
like.
let the convicts there, but
Yeah, that's true. So there's this big, giant, enormous, like hologram table with like a strategic map of the Hive City that you are orbiting over and trying to defend. And above you is this giant glass dome, just like huge, like a skyscraper in space, and you can see out into the vast void beyond and whatnot. And all of Scott, to your point about all of the little like greeblies and like bespoke details. Around like the edge of there's like a there, around the far edge of the mission terminal, there are like these fans. I'm not sure what they're doing, but I guess they're trying to move air a little bit through here so it doesn't get too stanky and too stagnant. And like I love this detail. I love it whenever I see this. It's not, it doesn't take that long, but it did require a human being to go in and change this. All the fans are moving at a slightly different speed. And one of them I don't think is working at all. I love that. But yeah, lots of skulls, lots of spikes, many, many purity seals, of course, that signature red wax with a trail of parchment. And there's lots of fun people. There's NPCs, of course, but then there's also other players. You spawn in and there's a bunch of you get to see everybody else's custom made character running around this little hub world.
Yeah, it's very fun. It's very silly. You can see people doing Revolver Ocelot cosplays, or
Yes.
the endless supply of people with, was it a DLC character that looks like a RoboCop,
Right. Yes.
who's running around and everyone has the name RoboCop and or Judge Dredd listed above their name.
Correct. The two primary inspirations for that character, the Hive City Police, and they have a dog. You get to name the dog, which is great. So also you get to enjoy all the fun names that people come up for their pups. So yeah, this is a cool hub world. It's you're going to be coming here in between all of your missions. You're going to be spending a fair amount of time here. It's very poorly laid out. I've played this game for 30 hours. I
There's not a
can't.
map,
I have
right?
a pretty. Is there?
No,
Never even
I'm
occurred to me to
asking
look.
if there is a map.
No,
Not
and
that
I
I'm aware.
tried looking on the Darktide wiki page, and looking for like, okay, I just need like an overhead layout. Where's the fire exit on this thing? Like, where do I go
True.
to turn in all of my penances, and where do I get all the weapons? Like, I had to run around, I don't know, for like 5 minutes, because like the
It's not that
aesthetic.
it's big, it's just that like there's like three or four main hallways that all kind of look very similar, and you never guess the right one. And I thought I had it down after 30 hours, and then I went to go to the Psycharium to go test out some new item. And sure enough, I had trouble finding
A map would do wonders, but maybe the technology just wasn't there yet at the time.
Sure.
They needed some psychic seer in order to help guide us along. But yeah, this is your hub world. This is where you get access to all of your main game modes and all of your loot and NPCs and things. And then this is where you basically have no other option but to start the only single game mode that you have available to you, which is the adventure mode. And this is the thing that launches you out into missions along the main story of the game called the Path of Trust, which I guess maybe to summarize succinctly from my end, because I haven't really gotten that, well, I don't know, I've got maybe like halfway through it, is that there's the attack that started the whole wheel in motion and you being saved was caused, I believe, by some sort of traitor amongst the mists of the Inquisitorium, and that the people on board this ship are trying to suss out who the traitor is. And at the point that at which I'm in the story, it seems as though this very mustache twirling evil villain with all sorts of skull helmets and bad guy lieutenants and stuff who claims he's the leader of the traitors seems like a viable candidate, but not all
Scott, if
is.
I may interject real quick, the events of Darktide are not covered in the opening cinematic. They are kind of covered in a cinematic that was released ahead of the actual launch of the game, where it's
Okay.
like the Hive City, which is already in a terrible state of disrepair and dysfunction and chaos, billions of people living on top of each other, all sorts of, just a terrible situation. The planet is being polluted. There are gang wars happening in the bottom sections of the city. There's all sorts of intrigue and skullduggery and violence and terribleness happening already. The Mobian Sixth, a military regiment, shows up. They return from campaign, and it appears that while they were on campaign, they have switched sides. They're no longer fighting for the Imperium. They are now fighting for the forces of chaos. Specifically, they are worshiping the god Nurgle, the god of decay and pestilence.
Seems like a bad
And
choice.
it's, well, you'd be surprised. It's a pretty competitive choice of the four main chaos gods. They, my understanding is like the big event is they drive a train into the base of the Hive City
That's
with
right, yeah.
a like a virus bomb of some kind, or like a plague bomb. Which causes sort of the initial outbreak of Nurgle zombies and the initial sort of turning of people from regular Imperial citizens to cultists. And yes, you are absolutely right. They're, of course, critically, they couldn't have done this alone. They must be working with someone. There must be someone on the inside helping them. And at the point, and at the time that the game actually starts, you start actually playing the Nurgle cult. And the traitor military unit, the Mobian Sixth, are dug in pretty deep. They have taken over a decent chunk of the Hive City, and is up to the Inquisition to get it back. And the Inquisition is in such a tough spot, they are having to recruit from they're having to recruit Suicide Squad style, including your character, who was sentenced for execution, but your execution has been delayed and will be continue to be delayed, maybe if you continue to work diligently. And responsibly and well for the forces of the Inquisition. So sorry, Scott. What were you, I just wanted to make it clear that like
No,
there isn't
yeah,
just one
that
traitor. There's also like this giant. There's a giant horde of zombies. There's a giant army of traitor guardsmen. There's a giant cult of cultists. But also there are some traitors in our midst.
yes, that's a better description, because like for me it felt like I was super pumped of like, okay, I'm super excited to go in, shoot some tau, shoot some Terminids, blow up
Right.
some Protoss stand-ins here and there.
Sure,
And
sure,
then I found
sure.
out, oh, I'm just,
Wait a
oh,
minute.
it's a zombie game. Okay, I'm just shooting zombies. Got it. And then maybe after a few hours, it just kind of I mean, each one of these missions has you kind of doing almost sort of the same thing, where you drop into a mission and it's a different story beat behind it, but or even before that, you'll be greeted with this kind of I think like a pretty well done but like low spec like terminal view of like this grainy CRT monitor with like a Gary Oldman surrogate barking orders at you
Hey,
of like
we got Captain Price talking to us. Captain Morrow
Captain
is one of
Morrow.
your main NPC handlers, and they have like different. There's a cast of NPCs, and a lot of them are pretty interesting, and the voice acting is all very good, and different people are. But yeah, so your first mission, a lot of your first missions are you've got this guy talking to you in a very Call of Duty 4-esque like intro screen. It's like, all right, you're out of prison. We're throwing you in the deep end. We need you to go and assassinate this heretic, this cultist leader, one of the
Right,
commanders.
listen up, listener. We're dropping you into Sector X1-7-J. And today you're going to find a MacGuffin to press the space bar on and watch the progress bar fill
After
up.
you press the space bar and you're waiting for the progress bar, the progress bar could stop at any moment, and then you gotta go do a mini game to get it started again. Yes.
Don't remember, sometimes you press the button to call the elevator, but it's not actually an elevator. It's a set of stairs that comes down, and then you have to walk up those stairs.
Which I love that inversion of expectations. Yes, there are kind of a set number of mechanics that they use and employ throughout the 20 mission long campaign of the bespoke campaign, which is
And
let's address this right.
Those are the same maps for everything. It's not procedurally generated in any way besides like the perhaps exact
Indeed.
enemy composition of the waves or whatever.
Right. So I chose this game for a number of reasons. I was kind of, maybe I was deluding myself into thinking, I bought this game a while ago. I started it up like once or twice just to kind of stress test it. And I think there's maybe like some procedural generate, like some modules getting plugged together to make the level there. Nope, absolutely not. All of the main story missions, it's the same level. But as you say, Colin, where the equipment is placed and where and when enemies spawn and the composition of those enemies, a la Left 4 Dead's director, the logic that determines what spawns when, to make each run somewhat randomized and somewhat engaging so that you're having fights at different times in different situations. That's really all that's randomized. Now, I'm a big proponent of meaningful gameplay impacting randomization being key to my roguelike experience. And this game does that amazingly,
Well,
brilliantly.
does
I've
it
played
the
through a lot of these
well?
levels multiple times and they haven't gotten stale, for me at least.
And I think the I agree with that. I think
But
the one the but is that
and
the
there's
big
many buts, so I wanna well, let's get to those right
the
now.
big highlighted point that I have in my Google Doc here is no permadeath, and that can come in different ways,
Gold.
in different forms. And I know that there's some action RPG games that like permadeath. Like you can do a hardcore mode for Diablo or Diablo 2, and that seems like it would work well within that system, like if it's kind of designed around that. I've seen people like posting in various places about Darktide of like, hey, like what would people think about a hardcore mode? I don't think that would really work at all here because like the game systems, it's so designed to be a cooperative, like someone gets downed, you got to go and pick that person up, but if they get downed and like they're executed or whatever, and then they're like captured on the other side of the map. You can it's a neat little kind of mini game that you can kind of go and rescue them. But if like the game just seems way too chaotic and too hinged on like a squad tactical experience, that permadeath I feel like would be really bad in this main story game mode.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, the other two game modes that we have for Expeditions and Mortis Trials that we'll talk about in a second, this is where the kind of split between Darktide and Vermintide 2 has people a little wishing that the mode from Vermintide 2 was here to some degree. So I was curious to figure this like why. So I went and downloaded Vermintide 2 again, and I booted up
Yeah, because we're
that
playing it next week, right?
chaos. Spoiler alert. Yeah, and I was like, okay, well, what was it about this game mode that people liked differently than these other two ones? And in Vermintide 2, it was like you play through that same kind of prologue thing that we just sort of talked about. But
Where
boom, there it is.
critically you learn how to fight in first person. Have we mentioned this is a melee combat game? It's 50% melee combat, it's 50% guns, another 50% of like magical powers. Sorry,
There
do
you go.
continue.
And yeah, so in Vermintide 2, you play through that same kind of prologue sequence, but then boom, like you have this big gate that's available to you right at the start, no level progressing required. You go in, and it just starts you in kind of like this very basic but interesting, like roguelite experience where you don't need any predetermined progression. You don't need really anything, like, and you start with nothing. You start with like bare bones equipment for whatever character class that you have selected. And you go through this kind of randomized experience where if you fail that, you are sent back to the beginning and all of your junk is reset. Where in this case, like, you don't have that. And I feel like of the double helix that is one side of the strand being impactful gameplay, meaning like meaningful gameplay impacting randomization, and the other part being some reset mechanism.
Yeah.
And in this case, what I'm talking about is like this permadeath type idea, but
That well, I think it's even more it's that you have to be able to build something during a run. And in order to do that, there has to be the reset. Like, I think the reset is in service
sure.
of making build impactful choices throughout a run. That's not like, I mean, unless you call like the whole game a run, which I don't.
All right, yeah. And the new game mode in Darktide, Expeditions,
You do have at risk losing your one of
Your tech
your very
remnants.
many. There we go. Yeah, thank you. Again, one of the million different currencies, but that's not the same thing. That's just sort of a hint of that, but not that full experience. Yeah, I played a little bit of this Vermintide 2 mode that you're referring to, Scott, and that was like two, not 2 years. Pardon me. This was right around the time that Darktide 2 came out. I had an online group that was playing Vermintide 2, and we were playing this mode that you're referring to, the Chaos Wastes. And that was like 3.5 years ago. And it's kind of surprising that they haven't brought over what is a pretty popular mode, just copy-pasted it into this game.
Yeah, I can see on one hand them, like the developers wanting to do something new.
Sure.
And like the Chaos Waste mode is there. It exists in Vermintide 2. I could see like people
You
would
can
be
go play
raking.
that.
Yeah, like you could go play that. It works perfectly well. It's just fine. And I could see people raking them over the coals like, "Oh, you just copy-pasted the game mode." Like I would be perfectly happy if that mode came over to here because it's cool and interesting. But this expeditions mode, so this is something that I believe has some kind of like level gate associated with it, where you have to play through the main story mode until you've beaten mission 10, I think like out of 20 or something like that. So you gotta get pretty far through the game to unlock this mode here. The default difficulty is one step up from noob level that I was normally playing at, which it's like not impossibly hard, but it's a pretty decent challenge, if you are.
It certainly is, especially if you have like a mid-level character. And it was for a period of time, definitely my preferred mode because it was like, ooh, it was hard enough to ratchet up the drama. Like, gosh, I don't want to have to. Obviously, I'm not at risk of having to remake my character or start the game all over again, but I don't want to have to replay this entire mission. I hope we get it, sort of thing. Yeah, so you have to start at Malice, and what the general what do we start looking at? We have a map with nodes. Oh my gosh, what is this? Slay the Spire?
Yeah, I mean, what am I seeing double here? It at first glance actually kind of We're
does
not
look.
seeing double. It's not really like that at all.
Well,
But
there
Slay the
are
Spire too. It's right
spots
here.
on a map with lines.
There you go. That's a roguelite, right? I mean,
Sure. According to me.
the Vienna interpretation. So you have this node map that is gated by you needing to collect this junk across this static map that is it's Helldivers, where like you have a static like map mesh, and then on top of that are like random points of interest with like random compositions of roving bandits that are maneuvering about, and there's electricity storms attacking you at every 5 seconds and such. And I do like the idea behind this, where you have like, oh, you have 15 minutes and you got to go in and you got to get the stuff, and you can retreat back to this little shelter zone that gives you an extra bonus 5 minutes. It stops the clock, gives you a chance to heal and recoup and take a breath. You are like, that's the only place that you can heal up. That's the only place that you can find ammo or like other consumable items or useful tools to
Indeed,
use for the
this part
next.
of the mode is like killing floor. It's like, all
Yeah, it
right, we're
is exactly.
between waves and we're gonna re-up. Money, money, money. And so except in this case it's scrap. I guess you're spending scrap.
Yeah, so
Yeah.
you use scrap to trade for items, but you acquire tech remnants to progress through this campaign.
Indeed, which one of the NPCs wants for the war effort?
You're wandering through
Hadron.
the map, you're collecting garbage and recycling. You give the recycling to at the end, but the garbage you use to trade for food.
Precisely. So again, grimdark. Oh, we're just scraping by to survive.
Gotta eat
Yes,
these
and
sludge pellets.
it's there's in this game mode, I think it has a lot of promise, and it's not a wholly original idea, that's for sure, but it's grabbing inspiration from a lot of good sources. It's like a little bit killing floor, it's a little bit extraction shooter, it's a little bit Helldivers.
in that you're, going out into this somewhat open area, pursuing different objectives as you see fit, and then having to keep an eye on the clock. You don't want to push it too far. You don't want to get greedy and collect too many tech remnants, because eventually you gotta get out of there, either by being TPK'd by hordes of monsters.
Or the
What a
chaos
wonderful
spawn.
variety there is of those monsters, by the way. Or you call for extraction and you get airlifted out very dramatically.
And I think that like so this mode I think is interesting. It's the closest thing I guess to Chaos Wastes from Vermintide 2, but the crux of it is that you're going in with your previously built and created character. You're not like there's no like decision to be made about how your character is changing over the course of this run. You're just collecting scrap to unlock the next node to keep pursuing further. And I believe that yeah, so like if you fail, then like you fail the whole thing. That's I don't know, like kind of the reset mechanism, question mark. But
Kind of. Yeah,
this is
but it's the most like run-based thing in this game.
yeah. Well, maybe
Oh, maybe.
because we also have the Mortis Trials,
Oh, sure.
which I feel like to me this seemed more roguey than Expeditions, because
Because
Expeditions felt,
of the perks?
yeah, because of this like silly perk system that it takes a while for it to get off the ground. But the idea here is that you go to the Psycharion and you talk to the floating kind of like floating in that
Psyker
back
in
the
a
tank,
jar. Yeah, in the back of the tank. Yeah, exactly.
back the tank Psyker,
I mean, yeah,
who
40K is like, aped and borrowed from so much science fiction pop culture, that yeah, I thought it was pretty bold of them to just straight up grab Luke Skywalker from Empire Strikes Back and just put him in the game.
well,
No,
Luke
but so they're
Skywalker,
floating and yep.
yeah, Luke Skywalker, if you've changed his gender to female and gave her a comically thick Russian accent, who will be narrating your every move
Yeah.
in this
Sanding off the
mode.
serial numbers, right? Indeed. So yeah, you go into the Psycharium and actually, sorry, Scott, I have a question for you. Is all of the Mortis trial happening in like the holodeck thing?
I
Or is
think it
she like
is.
astrally projecting you somewhere to fight in real life-ish?
The understanding that I got of it, and people will be quick to correct me as always, is that she is giving you much like the after, like the post prologue, just log, part of the story of like your extra bit of training. Like, oh, let's delve deep into your mind. Like, this isn't like an actual thing. It's like your
Oh.
X-Men Cerebro virtualization holodeck
Yeah, I'm looking
simulation.
it up. It's definitely it's all in your mind. Okay.
But there was one match I was playing earlier today that seemed like it was something along the lines of, oh, we'll dive deep into the memory of this other NPC and like live out an experience of theirs when they had to go and do this thing that I thought was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. I
Oh.
still got bodied by like hordes of mutants throwing me around, but so the idea behind
So yeah,
this,
what is Rogi? What is the Rogi idea about this?
well, the idea is that you have 12 waves to go through.
So horde mode type structure.
It's a horde mode structure, unlike your Helldivers mode that we were just talking about. And the idea is that you have like a fixed map that you spawn in on, and enemies will just like tidal wave out of all these different holes and stuff per the usual. But every so often between rounds, you'll pick a like an archetype of like, well, do you want to be a fulminator? Do you want to be a death dealer or voltaic or colossus? And these are things that kind of just like define your overall build, I guess, for the run, in air quotes. So for example, like the Colossus, this indulgence archetype specializes in survivability focused on close quarters melee combat, or the Fulminator combines elements of both pyrokinetic and voltaic disciplines. The Goliath reduces movement restrictions, etc. So like you have kind of a pseudo class that you
On top
pick.
of your existing class.
Exactly. So crucially, this is another thing that's level gated, where you have to get through story mission 6, and I think you have to, The game says you have to be XP level 13 to be in it. For some reason, it unlocked for me at level 9. I don't know if that's just because it was gated behind the story mode or what, but I was like, am I supposed to be here? Am I supposed to be in this game? But so the idea is you got 12 waves. Each wave is, I don't know, somewhere around like 5-ish minutes, question mark. You're picking these perks that happen every so often. Well, there's some that you pick from and some that are just like granted to you without any kind of decision authority behind them. It's just like, hey, by the way, you now have this. Congrats. And what else? And you have like little mission variants that happen from time to time of like, oh, you got to go over to this side of the map and pull the lever and you got to kill all the enemies. And you got to go over to this side of the map and pull the lever and you pick up like the energy cylinder and you got to walk it to the center of the map and plop it in the thing. So it kind of breaks up the just pure killing floor style. You're just killing enemies with the things. But I think the idea here is that by wave 10, 11, or 12, you have so many of these like wild perks stacked up on top of each other that that's where it becomes almost kind of like this Vampire Survivors chaotic maelstrom of just like every time I hit an enemy with a melee attack, like they go flying back 10 feet, they take pyrokinetic damage and they explode on impact with other stuff. And I believe it's supposed to get that crazy. We never got that far because it is.
I feel like, I mean, at one point you did say, I can't even see what's happening. Like, I mean, there's a lot of shit on screen. But yeah, the run that we got furthest in, I can't remember what wave we got to, but I don't know, I want to say like 7 or 8 or something. But even by then, I mean, like my grenade was like generating, it was like it had a high percentage to create two grenades instead of one. And each of those grenades was double the effect, double the explosive effect, and it generated like a shield. And I want to say there was something else. And like everybody has some kind of crazy bombastic, if you'll forgive the pun. Some sort of big, impressive mega effect. So it got pretty wild. The other thing that got pretty wild is that the waves of enemies are sort of themed. So like all so we had one round where it was like all giant mutant guys. It was like all tanks
Oops,
from
all
Left 4
tanks.
Dead. Big giant mutant man running around. And in the mechanical the way it works in this game is that it runs up, it charges at you. I guess it's more of a charger from Left 4 Dead 2. Anyway, grabs you, shakes you around, and then throws you. And there were like a dozen of these. And we're not expecting this. And we all four of us got like separated, and we all had our own separate battle. There is only war. A separate battle against like four 1v4 against these giant mutant guys, and we're just oh,
All
getting
right,
ping ponged around.
really
But anyway.
to get the experience down for this, we all need to do our best mutant like roaring impression all at the same time. Are you ready to do this? All right,
Right.
I'll count down from three. Three, two, one.
Perfect. Ship it. Hey, if you need any more voice actors, the voice acting's great, by the way. And that includes the enemies and all the weird gurgling and yelling and stuff. But Scott, you were saying that apparently this mode has a reputation for being even crazier and more Vampire Survivory.
Yeah, and I think the idea is that this is maybe more intended as a you've beaten the main story, like your character's level 30. This is like an extra end game content thing for you to experience. And once you have like the we didn't really talk about it, but like, you pick your character archetype class and you go through like your kind of standard RPG progression of like, oh, well, do you want to progress down this side of the Christmas tree or that side of the Christmas tree to do this X, this very kind of specific thing? And I could see that like once you have like fully maxed out that thing and you're like, all right, I'm beating all the missions, I've done all the stuff,
What now?
let's pop into this just to kind of futz around with it some. And if you already have all that stuff pre-built and predefined, then I could see that like, oh yeah, jumping into this mode then feels kind of like I don't know, like an end game extra content kind of deal. But you in order to have that, you have to jump in with like 20 plus hours of gameplay already invested into it. So it kind of almost defeats the purpose of it being sort of this roguelite wrapper on top of a fully fledged RPG system. In some sense, it kind of reminds me of like Diablo 3 had this mode called Greater Rifts that Will was criminally addicted to. And We would just be like grinding all these keys in the main mode to like gotta get the greater rift, and you would have like this timed sequence of like running through and like killing as many elites as you possibly could. But again, that's something that like if you're killed in that, I guess while not playing in hardcore mode, you're just kind of like reset to the beginning with your predefined character with all of your equipment and all that stuff. And there isn't really any kind of penalty to death other than just like restarting that mode over. I mean, you know, that build in air quotes, such as it was, both there and in this Mortis Trials thing resets, but you know, it's not really a roguelite mode. And I kept thinking back to like the episode we did on Orcs Must Die Death Trap, and that kind of felt a little bit more roguey in the sense that it's like you have this kind of character progression that you're going through. But Colin, do you remember if in Orcs Must Die, like, did you have like a predefined character RPG build that you went into the rounds with, or was that something that you built on the fly
Had
in the game mode?
skills that were predetermined.
You basically had a build that you could go in with. You could modify it, but it's not. There was like the one you could like have some modifiers that would just like give you a random set of traps every time, and that was interesting. I think that would probably make the game more roguelike. I feel like this the these the rogue modes in this game, Darktide, reminds me, it's like it felt the most like God, I can never remember the name of this game because it's so generic. It's Dead Zone
Remnant, Dead
Rogue.
Zone. Oh, they're up.
Yeah, I literally looked it up like 5 minutes ago and I couldn't remember its name from then to
Oof.
now.
Hey, it's getting a sequel, by the way.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's christened with a bit of better name. I feel like Dead
Yeah, we'll
Zone
see.
Rogue is the actual rogue version of this, where like it's not like the theme is not the same, but it is actually rogue, and like the guns meaningfully diverge as you gain them over time.
Yeah, sure.
Versus, I mean, you're still starting with your same build, so the amount of differentiation that you can get is limited by you're starting from the same spot. It's like having your build half built no matter what when you start.
Yeah, I guess that kind of ties into another question I have here in my doc of like this is an example of like a non-rogue game that's like very RPG heavy that has like, I don't know, maybe some rogue systems tied into that. And we have one example of like Vermintide 2 having like a thing that's like, yeah, you can just jump in at any time. You can just boot up the game. You can just play this. You don't have to do any of the main story stuff. Is there like a kind of a wish list or like an ideal like checkbox thing that we would want from a game that like exists as like, hey, here's this thing that already exists, but what if we attach a roguelite or whatever mode to it? Like this, like Darktide, like overall as a game itself and like the main story missions, I had fun. I thought it was a fun experience. I was glad to have played it. I'm happy that Andrew gifted me a copy. It was fun. It was zany. Love that mode. I think the Expedition and Mortis Trials, specifically as like rogue style attempts at that, kind of fall flat as a result. But is there a way that like you know, some of these other games, like I don't know, The Last of Us or God of War or The Division, like games or Helldivers, you know, games that are not roguelites specific, well, not they're not, like, period. Adding in a mode like that, how do they do it good and how do they do it bad? Like what should they avoid doing?
I mean, I think that this game, you could add in something that is more roguey than this was. Like, oh, you were going on a mission and you crashed into the hive scum and like lost all your gear. Now you just have to find your gear as you go through, and like you don't get a choice in your starting weapon. But like, oh,
Yeah,
you
yeah,
stumble
yeah.
on like.
You're like down in Necromunda, and you gotta pick like which of the Necromunda gangs you're gonna like throw your lot in with. So it's like, hey, I want to be with the Goliaths, and like you get all these cool drugs, or like, hey, I want to be the Rat Skinners, and you're like, you know, get like stealth ability. I've said too much. Yeah. Well, an ability, something like that, where it's like we reset. Yeah.
Yeah, like of here's the, you know, you each have what, like eight different melee option weapons, right? For each character class, there's like eight or ten different ones you can get, and same with the ranged weapons.
Oh, there's a shitload of game guns and also armaments in this game. I think there's probably more than that. But yeah,
Per class, there's a limited set of them.
Oh, I see. Per class, you're saying. Excuse me. Yeah, right.
So, like, all right, you still get to drop in as, like, the big guy or the psyker. Like, that's probably... I don't think that you could have this game and not have that be part of it. But it'd be like, all right, you smashed in a thing into the armory and you've got your choice of two ranged weapons and two melee weapons. Like, oh, maybe they're not going to be the ones that you normally go with. So now your build isn't... You've got a slice and grenade arm gun build.
Sure. And there's loot in this game. Their weapons are like unique, but like in a mode that you're describing, this dream mode, Colin, I would like to see those weapon choices, like some really noticeable effects on these weapons, like Enter the Gungeon style. I want to see like big, impactful, unique items.
Maybe there are some weird weapons that you don't get in the base game. Like,
Hey, there you go. Like a
you
melter gun? Yeah, a melta.
sure.
Exactly. I've been talking to my wife about this all week. Why is there not a melta? Now, I mean, we know that they can make them. We know that it's possible in a hive city. Maybe for some reason, all right, my co-hosts are
Also,
not
I want to fight
entertained by this
orcs.
bit.
I want to fight
And
orcs.
we want to fight orcs, of course.
But I get that that's not reasonable. That's a real investment in the mode.
Well, there's some developments happening, not work specifically, but there's a big event happening in a day or so where the community is expecting the introduction of some familiar characters. I don't think it's gonna
Would
be
they be
orcs, but
familiar to me?
there seems to be people are thinking that there may be that the Hive City, that the Battle for Chersium may be the big development might be that. So perhaps some space marines may be coming to reinforce the Hive City. And I mean, realistically, I think in lore, they're going to send like maybe two
Yeah.
guys, but we'll see. That's what people are
Two Master
thinking or hoping
Chiefs.
for. Or like, I don't, the other thing that I've kind of like heard online is that, oh, maybe they're going to introduce like a chaos space marine or a chaos terminator or something as like an enemy or a boss or what have you. Anyway. Yeah. Something like that I think would be fun. For sure. What was I gonna say? I wanted to be clear. Hey, my little welcome to the grim dark future introduction bit at the beginning. Hey, that's tongue in cheek. That's all fun. We kid, we're joking. I think the implementation and the employment of some roguelike and roguelite mechanics is very welcome. I think these game modes are fun. I think that they could be a lot better. I'm glad they exist. I understand to some extent why they exist. It's like, hey, you have a maxed out character. You've been playing this game maybe since launch. You want something really, you want something different. Also, there's like some story beats that get new story information that's been disseminated through these new modes. So like, I appreciate what they're doing. I don't think this is, lazy or phoned in or unfun.
It's better than when they were just adding battle royale modes to everything.
So true. So true. But
Like,
what would I like to see in like the dream mode? Yeah, I don't know, more gear variety, I guess. Even more pronounced gear variety. There's a great amount of gear variety, but like it would be fun in a run. Like the experience of doing a roguelike run and then getting a broken piece of gear is so fun and kind of essential to my experience of playing games like Enter the Gungeon and Dead Cells, specifically. It would be fun to see here. I don't know how viable that is, but it would be cool. Indeed, indeed. Hey,
is there music
Scott.
in this game?
Oh, is there? Oh, he says coyly. Colin, you tell
I'm
us.
just sorry, I just needed to prompt Andrew.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, he knows full well. This has got to be the best soundtrack of the season so far. Come on. This is killer. Jesper Kidd, is that how you pronounce his name? I know him from Hitman 2 Silent Assassin. I had a copy of the main menu theme MP3 format on my PSP. I would plug it in to my car using one of those tape deck aux cable converters, and I would listen to this. It's not a song you listen to in the car. It's like this dramatic, like orchestral, like bum 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 bum. Anyway, he knocks it out of the park. This he sort of. manages to create this like epic movie soundtrack type of a feeling, but he employs all of these awesome gothic elements and synth elements. Soundtrack is great.
Yeah, I think the and not even just like the soundtrack, but like the sound design.
Oh,
where
yeah.
Like you're running around and you hear like this click 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 that I'm just like, oh no, is someone trying to start a fire in my fireplace? No, it is someone with an actual like flamethrower running around the corner.
Yeah, all the special classes of enemies have like little sound cues that are all very well thought out.
And I actually the click a click sound from the like the gas being lit is excellent sound cue because it also it you're just like, shit, where is it? Where is it? Where is it? Gotta find it.
Indeed. There's also the tick tock of like the explosive pox exploder boomer type enemy.
Yeah. And just the thump, 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 thump as the big guys are running for you.
The big guys, yeah. And then I'm trying to think what the sound cue is for the trapper who shoots a net at you. The trapper is just a little freak, and you hear her like going, I'm on the hunt, sort of thing. But yeah, and the sound, all the guns sound great, all the weapons sound great, all the enemies sound great. But back to the soundtrack real quick. It's very good. Specifically, shoot, I've already forgotten the name. There's one meme song that like everybody knows.
It does a good job of like injecting some like gothicness into it, which is it keeps it from feeling like generic sci-fi grim dark.
Lots of organs, lots of chanting, lots of Latin.
Yeah.
Totally, totally. Disposal Unit. That's the song that I'm thinking of. That is like the de facto like boss theme that gets used in like Dark Tide memes and just Warhammer memes in general. And like there's a lot of Warhammer video games, and like a lot of them have just sort of a standard movie soundtrack, epic Hollywood movie soundtrack. And this is the first time like I've seen a musician, a composer, really lean into that gothic, that industrial sound. And mama, it's great. At one point I turned it down because I was preparing to attend a black metal concert, and well, it was more of like kind of a fusion thing. Anyway, I was going to a metal concert and I was like preparing for it and listening to the bands on Spotify, and so I turned down the music of the Dark Tide music, and I played for a bit like that, listening to my own music. And then later I started up Dark Tide just by itself. And the loading screen began, where you see your characters in the drop ship and you're getting the dialogue from whatever NPC is running the mission. And I'm like, whoa, 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 something's wrong. It's too quiet. What is happening? What's going on? This is so bizarre. And I realized, oh, the soundtrack's off. And like it was like it was like a character was missing from the screens, as you know, corny as that might be to say. Hey, I have a question for you gentlemen. Well, we already kind of covered, like, I had a general question, which was like, you know, oh, were you ever interested in Warhammer 40,000? And we kind of covered that, like what your general sort of impressions and experiences are. I have, the other question is, Scott and Colin, what can you tell me about the heal station in this game? The primary way of regaining lost hit points that are randomly spawned throughout the level and that have a limited number of charges available for you to re-up your lost hit points.
Well, like any good socialist healthcare system, Sweden has all of these on every street corner in Stockholm. They have these like giant metal arms with huge needles attached to them that you walk up to one of these Medicaid stations, and it just goes whoosh, and it shoots these giant syringes into your body, and you go, that's the stuff. You feel so much better as a result.
This is what the Democrats want. I'm looking at pictures of it now. Is it actually a person in there?
Ah, ding, ding, ding. That is what I was curious if y'all picked up on.
I thought it was a robot skull.
But yes,
an actual human.
Yeah. So, in the Imperium, there was a great war against AI, and as a result, true artificial intelligence is outlawed. It's heresy. So in place of computers, they use the remains, the lobotomized and tech-injected husks of human beings. in the form of servitors. So those floating skulls allows a real person's skull and part of a real person's brain that has been retrofitted to work as a rudimentary biological computer. So yes, each heal station has the torso of a person who theoretically shouldn't know what's going on, but they have different voice lines. Randomly, they'll gain sentience. You'll be playing a mission and you'll be in the middle of like fighting and like having, you know, a lot of stuff on your mind. And then you've got the healing station, the vending machine, the HEV charger in your ear going, please take me with you. I'm so lonely. So I just, you know, quick reminder, this is a wonderful example, and this is throughout the game, a reminder that, you might be fighting a plague cult. You might be fighting against the forces of chaos, but the Imperium is a terrible, terrible place where people are ground up literally, figuratively, and repurposed to act as vending machines. There's not so much shades of gray, but like shades of like dark charcoal, like on all over the place, which I thought Will would like, but apparently he did not like the shooting, so he is not here.
Well, Will doesn't like anything that's not Slay the Spire, let's be clear. So there's that. And then like he also only put 62 hours into the game, but most, I would say 99.99995% of that was him exiting the game after playing it for 20 minutes and then having just like the launch, launcher on in the background without him realizing it.
Indeed. Which that's less of a technical problem, but it is related to a technical problem I've been having. It takes me forever to close this game. Like if I Alt F4, I thought it was a problem with me Alt F4, but if I actually just like quit, it just like freezes and hangs out there for like 10 seconds, 15 seconds before it goes away. Real quick call out. The game is a little bit, it's a lot to run. There are crashes. I would say I maybe experienced in 30 hours, like, I don't know, 5 crashes. The technical problems, I think, are perfectly manageable, but they are present. And if this was a simpler or a more rudimentary looking game, I'd be giving them a lot more grief, but I feel like
it's a full ass game.
It's a full game, and there's so much stuff on screen.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a guy walking around without a head for some amount of time.
Yes, that is a common occurrence in the hub world. Different players are popping in, but only part of their avatars appear at a time because, of course, they're customized, so they're like modular. And anyway, and I said to my wife, I'm like, why don't they just write the code so that it's like, hey, if it hasn't loaded like the guy's torso, maybe just don't load him at all until everything is. And she's like, well, they probably wrote it that way. It's just not working as intended.
Like, oh, well, okay. at the Fat Shark dev studios, they just have all these like floating servitor skulls running around trying to fix all the bugs. They have all the previous devs who have since left the company have been ground up and have been repurposed into
servitor code. Do it again. Ultra think this time.
Yes, precisely, precisely.
Praying to the machine god of Claude. The machine Claude.
Ooh, the machine Claude. Boom. All praise the Omnissiah. Very good. All right. Well, I realize not the roguiest of games, but I waited quite a long time to play this game so that I could play with you gentlemen. I'm so glad that this expedition mode got released so that it was a little more justifiable. But I think this is a good example of, as we've discussed almost, you know, as we've discussed almost to death or maybe undeath, Emperor of Mankind style on the Golden Throne. The fact that, hey, you know, regular games can take cues from roguelikes and do a good job. And, you know, I was being cute again in my introduction. I think all the roguey elements are to the game's benefit, and I'm glad this stuff exists. I hope they continue to expand and expound upon these elements, because this is a very active, living game that is being updated and changed and improved as the years go on.
Yeah, is there anything else we want to touch on before jumping into rankings?
I think we, as the hands of the Emperor, should judge this game
Oh boy.
Oh
Yeah,
boy.
will
Okay.
this game receive the Emperor's mercy? Oh, let's find out.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna start off with the Emperor's Wrath a little bit here.
Whoa, okay.
To be clear, I think like this game is fun. I had a fun time playing the main part of the game. But the roguelite modes in this game are not that great. And I think the fact that like if this was like their first attempt at doing those kinds of modes, I would maybe give it a little more leeway. But the fact that they already did the Chaos Wastes, and it's like, well, they figured out the formula. They just didn't apply it to this one for some baffling reason. Well, I don't know. Maybe they had the reasons, but it would be a welcome addition if they added it here. And I don't know if that's something that's coming down the line, but yeah, I don't know. Like the expeditions just didn't seem that interesting. The fact that like you go in with like a pre-built RPG character kind of defeats the whole permadeath pillar of it. The Mortis trials I thought were kind of interesting, but I don't know. Like just didn't really have that much like deep decision making to it. But I think like the good parts of this game, I think the art design, soundtrack, voice acting, all great. Core gameplay loop of the main systems was fun. Like I think even playing with randos was also fun. The fact that I don't really know anything about Warhammer just added to the silliness factor. I was just like, yep, okay, sure, floating skull, got it. That seems like a perfectly adept hacking device. So I thought like the story in camp there was cool. This game also has cross-platform multiplayer, which for something like as like big budget and visually expensive as this seems like a nice to have that they didn't really need to add in, but I'm
And I
glad that
played it and it worked great.
yeah, I'm glad it's there. And it seems like there's kind of this rep that Fat Shark has of like, oh, they develop a thing, it's kind of like lukewarm or meh to start with, and then they refine it to like what was actually like good over time. And maybe that's what like Expedition and Mortis Trials will actually get to eventually. I don't know if the Vermintide 2 Chaos Waste actually started off as good, but whatever they refined it to for how it is now was perfectly fun. So I think for me, like just like I'm only scoring this game as just like just on its rogue modes. So
Sure.
I'm going a little I'm my Warhammer is falling pretty hard on this one. I'm giving 40K Darktide a 5. Again, because of those just looking at those mode specifically. I think overall is like a Destiny style action RPG shooter. It's a solid 7. But those modes, I don't know. I'm just not super sold on them. Give me that Chaos Waste mode and I'll bump that up to a 7 easy.
Well, I'll go next. I'll start it off with exactly the 7 that Scott was trying to get it up to. I guess I'm gonna rate this game more on the whole package rather than just the roguelike mode, because I do feel like it's not a huge part of the game itself. As we go on and we've rated more games, I think this podcast in general has gotten looser with what we're allowing on the podcast. So I'm just gonna rate this, since it's not like a 9 out of 10, I'm fine with just rating it as the game itself. I had a good time playing with the boys, and just running around shooting. I think I enjoyed the co-op mode with this more than some of the other roguelike co-op game modes we've played, just because it's got a better. I like the setting. I think it's a more interesting theme, story, setting than most generic-y sci-fi stuff. And it's got a lot to draw on immediately, so you can like, it's got a lot of depth that you can either engage with or not right off the bat, which I think actually does. I think 40K does a better job of having that than many other media franchises. Like it's got a deep lore to draw on, so I'm giving it a fair amount of extra points just for that. I don't know if it was truly expressed in this game, but enough little like bits and pieces in there to give it that depth that I wanted. I really enjoyed playing the big brute guy, punching people around, ogrin, shooting grenades, smashing stuff. So I found the combat to be pretty satisfying. And it's got a great soundtrack. So 7.
Oh, right. Well, I wasn't always a Warhammer 40,000 fan. In fact, I was a designated Warhammer 40,000 hater for an extremely long period of time. because I was a big Dungeons and Dragons person. That was like my main gaming thing for a long time. And I still play Dungeons and Dragons, but like it was sort of my main focus, plus computer games. And I thought that the memes that I would see on the internet were sometimes kind of funny, but kind of weird also. I thought the character design and the miniatures was like just too goofy. And that's something that they've kind of addressed. Like just the proportions of Space Marines for a long time, like looked weird. And it's like, I'm like, why are people spending so much time painting these miniatures? They look strange. They don't look human. And perhaps I was, kind of missing the point. And also I don't know, I had a weird, like inflated sense of my own like media savviness. I know what's good and I know what's bad, and this is good and this is bad. But then during lockdown, it's like, oh, well, we do have that starter kit that somebody gave me for free because I'm so into D&D miniatures. Yeah, let's throw them together, let's paint them, let's play it. It's like, oh, well, this is a very fulfilling experience to go through the crafting and then the construction and the painting and then the actual execution of this game. It's like you can make a thing, you can make a game piece, and then you can use it for something. And like the whole package is really intriguing. And then that sort of brought me around to the fact that like, wow, people, this is a very unique and compelling setting that has a lot of interesting stuff happening. And I mentioned earlier that, it's serious. You made a great distinction, Colin. In universe, it is totally serious. The writers, of course, Warhammer 40,000 started as a strictly satirical endeavor, and unfortunately, some of that satire has been lost. But I think this game does a good job of making clear that this is not a future worth replicating. Even the evil bad guys who are wearing more skulls than the supposed good guys, and are mutated and have tentacles coming out of them, even those guys have like a storyline, a story that explains like, well, why would they choose to serve the forces of chaos? Because in the circumstances that are illuminated in cutscenes, the forces of chaos were offering a better deal. And the Imperium is also a very chaotic place, is a very evil place. And so it makes sense. Anyway, here's the deal. For a Warhammer fan, Warhammer 40,000 fan such as myself, this is like easily my favorite Warhammer game that I've played. It's so great to see such like recognizable things rendered beautifully and looking photorealistic, like all the different weapons that we were picking up. Like in one of our first games together, I unlocked the Catachan Devil's Claw sword, which is the like signature machete sword that the jungle fighters of Catachan fight with, and I've spent hours upon hours painting and assembling that exact type of sword and to make my army of Catachan jungle fighters, and unlocked that like in the first hours, and I was over the moon, delighted. I get to use this weapon and see it rendered out and animated in such a wonderful, visceral, exciting way. Really fulfilling from a fan's perspective. Lots of the little bits of terrain and again, weapons and Griblies found throughout the levels of Darktide. I am intimately familiar with the shape of a lasgun, got it down, and it's cool to see here. I did not especially like Space Marine 2, number one, because there's no roguelike mode. I mean, come on. It does have a horde mode. But I don't know, something about the power fantasy of playing a third person Space Marine superhero did not speak to me. Playing Assault of the Earth, Hive Scum, Gunslinger was way more my speed. Getting down in the first person, the muck in the trenches, battling tooth and nail, and just scraping by to survive. I've been playing some of the higher difficulties, and it's great. All this to say, the combat and the weapons from a first person, from an FPS meathead perspective, and a Warhammer 40,000 fan perspective, there really is no better offering on the market at this point. Now, as the co-host of a roguelike podcast, there are some definite issues. But so here's where I'm coming down on it. This is going to get my coveted It's My New Number 10 award, which means something very different for my co-host because, of course, I'm using a different scoring system. It's My New Number 10. It scores 8.111111 Andrew points, putting it right in front of Dead Zone Rogue and right behind Doom RL. Again, it would have scored higher if the expedition mode was more robust. And if it was more, if it was more of a in-depth, well, we've discussed it. So this is one of those games where I'm playing it immediately after we disconnect here. And I'm looking forward to it. And thank you for joining me on the expedition, into the Hive City. I think this, again, is a game that leverages randomization extremely well. I would like to see it take the next step and go even further.
Well, that is going to land the dropship of 40K Dark Tide at our number 58 out of 95 games that we've looked at thus far. Our big episode 100 is coming in July. I've got big plans. I don't remember if I've shared them with my co-host, but we shall see. But that is, yeah, that's going to wind down our 40K coverage there. I guess, similar games to Dark Tide. We talked a lot about Vermintide 2's Chaos Waste. Definitely check that out.
Stay tuned and a half, maybe.
Yeah. If you wanted a much more roguey style experience in the 40K universe, did you know that there's a Warhammer Survivors game? Actually, I don't remember if that's out yet.
Quick call out. This game does not have loot boxes. It has paid cosmetics. I'm totally fine with that. Totally fine with it. I think this is a well-implemented payment structure. It's totally optional. You do have to buy new classes, but again, there's a lot of content there. So anyway, there's a Warhammer Survivors where you can actually play as a Catachan. That feels like a good match, actually, because, you know, hordes of enemies.
I see a Catachan fighter in there.
Yeah, exactly.
And you can fight orcs.
Ooh, Colin, orcs.
Lots of orcs. No, but I want to be an orc.
And a giant foot.
Good point.
But there's also, we have the game that was, I think, briefly delisted off of Steam and then relisted, Void War, FTL with a very thin coat of grimdark paint.
We're going to play that eventually. That's on my list of picks one of these days.
Also, to add to that list is Templar Battle Force, which I think is, it's kind of, I don't know, that's more like 40K if you kind of squint really hard, but it's kind of like a tactical XCOM-y looking game that I played a little bit of, and I was actually like pretty surprised at how much I was vibing with it. I'm going to lump Quasimorph in here as well as something. It's not really 40K, but it's got enough of that kind of grim, dark,
right, grimy sci-fi,
yeah,
aliens universe type thing.
With crucially Eldritch horrors that you have to battle at some point. There's a game I don't think is released yet, but stay tuned for Void Martyrs, which I think is supposed to try to ape that. Grimdark 40K.
So 40,000 coded. Okay, nice.
And then finally, I think like, tying to sort of the more four-player co-op experience, but being more roguey, is Jump Space, which I think is like supposed to be, yeah, like a co-op shooter. It's almost sort of like FPS FTL mode in a way, where you are the ship, you run around, but like you're more kind of FPS style of like the crewman on the ship in a way.
Yeah.
Which also seems very interesting.
I played the demo. It seems cool. It's somewhere on my list.
But yeah, that's going to wind down our 40K episode here. We're going to power down the space generators. And yeah, you can send in your 40K experiences to grogpodzone@gmail.com. Our Mastodon, grogpod@gamedev.place, and our website has all the stuff. You can just go there to find all the things. Grogpod.zone. It's the website. But our next episode, Listener Request Week, is returning. We have the biggest episode of 2026, if you didn't count Slay the Spire 2 at all. We are finally talking the cat breeding Binding of Isaac in universe kind of sequel, Mugenics, finally. We will be fine. I don't know if my cat was meowing into the microphone earlier. She was definitely rubbing her face on it. So Molly is very excited for us to talk about cats shooting lasers and meowing nonstop and meowing to the music, and you're fighting other bizarre mutated cat bosses.
Yo, this game is 4.5 gigs. Wow.
Somehow, like, I think there's like this is another class of classic case of Edmund McMillen, like, bottomless pit of content type stuff and like synergies and items. And like, I'm sure we'll all be playing the game in like 10 different ways kind of deal. I've been playing a little bit of it ahead of time just to kind of get a vibe for it, and it's interesting. So yeah, Mugenics up next. But playing us out from this episode, I don't know, Andrew, do the words Nexus, Fabalor, Implorum, Quadige, Ignifer, Macto, Pridium, Satory have any meaning to you? Well,
Ooh, now you're talking my language.
we'll fire out some. We're gonna send in the disposal unit. We got some muties and a mutiny to take care of.